exciting so far. It's only day one, but you know, we got three more days ahead of us, so looking forward to a lot of fun activities out here.
Right.
A lot of good,
Technically day one. First day of the conference, but we arrived yesterday. I think we're already feeling the tiredness because it's 8:40 and we're both drinking coffee as we record the podcast. But that's because there is so much to talk about in the world of relievers. We have plenty of news coming out of the bullpens and a lot of transactions to discuss, especially some very surprising ones. I mean, there have already been multiple situations, iterations of, oh my gosh, that happened.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good for this early in the offseason. I mean, we haven't even gotten a chance to break down the free agents, and that list is growing pretty rapidly. So next time we record in a couple weeks, we'll have plenty to talk about in the free agency sphere. But right now, we'll focus on options and opt-ins and opt-outs and, you know, news from around the league. And then we'll also discuss the recently concluded Wild World Series between the Dodgers and the Blue Jays. And then we'll wrap things up by comparing our ranks. We'll go through the top 40 of each of our ranks to a varying degree of depth, but we'll run through them and mostly talk about the ranks that we have that are different from each other. So if you're ready, Rick, let's hop right into the news.
Let's get into it.
All right. Let's start off with one that likely won't directly affect the fantasy world. I mean, it will, but, will have an effect on the bullpen.
Yeah.
But he himself will not be pitching, even though he did. And that's, sorry to bury the lead, but Craig Stammen was hired as the Padres manager. It sounded like we also have other relievers in the sphere of working for baseball teams, as Adam Ottavino was also in the running for the Rockies head of baseball operations before they hired Jonah Hill or Paul DePodesta. But Craig Stammen will be the manager of the Padres after being a reliever for them for a few years. I mean, any insight here? Is this just a fun, reliever turned manager?
It's just weird. It's, you know, a lot of the times we talk or we see, like, you know, backup catchers or these, like, you know, the types of guys who get hired as manager, it's typically not a reliever, like a full-time reliever. But yeah, like, we have Breslow in a baseball operations role at Boston, which is cool. And now, yeah, Stammen, who kind of came out of nowhere because they were talking about Nick Hundley, which made a ton of sense. Like, that's your backup catcher. He played with San Diego for a while. Or Albert Pujols was just, like, the name guy, right? It was, like, those two guys were kind of been thrown around. And then, like, Craig Stammen out of nowhere, who, it's funny because it's just crazy to me because I've been, like, Stammen was a prominent reliever when I started, like, doing reliever stuff here.
Right.
So, you know, like 2017 through 2022, he was in that Padres bullpen. And he had some really good years from them out of the pen. So, it's fun to see a reliever get a chance to manage. That's going to be an interesting bullpen, especially Mason Miller stays in there. Adrian Morahone, he's got some, right now he's got, you know, a really good bullpen to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But, they could see some different, role changes as the offseason goes.
Right. I don't know off the top of my head if there's any other open manager spots, but I was surprised Pujols didn't get a chance anywhere.
Yeah,
anywhere.
I know. Angels,
so,
Padres, and Orioles.
Yeah. None of them wanted him, and I'm surprised because, I mean, I don't know if a Hall of Fame player as a manager draws any fans, but that would certainly be cool to see Pujols out there, and he clearly wanted the opportunity because I think he managed somewhere in Central America. So,
and yeah, I believe he is managing the Dominican, like, WBC team.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So he's been involved with them. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I think he'll eventually land a job. I'm surprised that the Padres went this direction of Stammen, but it's fun. Fun to see a reliever get notarized, some act. I mean, I don't know if there's ever, I'm trying to think of, like, pitchers in general don't usually get manager jobs, but it's a reliever especially. It's just very interesting.
They're usually catchers in my memory. All right, moving forward with news. Chicago the Cubs do not expect to be involved in the market for the top free agent relief arms. That doesn't mean they won't be signing any relief pitchers this offseason, but that does mean they're probably not going to be in on guys like Edwin Diaz, Ryan Helsley, Devin Williams, you know, the big names that we are seeing in free agency. It's not very surprising considering the emergence of Daniel Palencia and the presence of some other relievers there, but...
Well, who else is there?
Right. I think part of that plays... Part of the reason that they're doing that is the success that they had with getting these random veteran relievers.
They're hoping to strike lightning twice, right. Which is...
No, because they had, like, Drew Pomeranz and Caleb Thielbar and all these old guys that sort of found a lot of success there unexpectedly, but... Maybe they're hoping they can do it again. Maybe they're hoping somebody like Ben Brown or Luke Little can step it up. They're definitely going to need to add to that bullpen because Palencia and Porter Hodge, I don't think, are ben the Brown, best yeah. one-two. But they've shown that they could. They've proven that they can do it once.
Yeah, I mean the depth chart right now and that for that bullpen is really bad after Palencia because you can't really rely on Hodge or Brown for meaningful innings. They're fine if you want to open up the year with them in your bullpen, in middle relief roles, fine. That's whatever. But like in meaningful innings right now is like setup guys. That's not great. And then you got like Luke Little, Eli Morgan, who was terrible last year. Ethan Roberts, Jordan Wicks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little surprising. And I thought they might take a run at like a Devin Williams just because of the connection with Craig Counsell, and it seems like a fit because as good as Palencia was, it wouldn't be like shocking if they were to take a step back with him and kind of have him in a setup role if they brought in a closer. But it looks like his role from this news seems like Palencia's stock's definitely going up because they got rid of Kittredge and they're not adding any big name relievers. So I mean, Palencia's in the driver's seat there for a pretty comfy role in that closer role.
Yeah, makes sense. He was very good last year. Moving forward, it looks like Kyle Finnegan wants to return to Detroit. He's quoted as saying, "Getting traded over here was big for me. I unlocked a lot of things that will help me moving forward in my career, and that's a testament to the people that this organization has." It makes sense. Kyle Finnegan absolutely took
is
off.
That, is that like a little bit of a slight to like Washington?
I'd be very grateful if I were Kyle Finnegan for the opportunities that the Nationals presented him. But he did take his game to another level. Mm-hmm. It does sort of put a little bit of, I don't know, pressure's not the right word, but I am a bit concerned about what Will Vest's fantasy value is next year if Kyle Finnegan does return to the Tigers. Yeah. But hey, it's half up to Finnegan and half up to the Tigers coming up with a contract that, you know, Finnegan wants to sign. They did, though, help him figure stuff out. However, it's not like it was like a secret sauce thing like some relievers go through when they, I don't know, pitch for the Rays or something. Finnegan just started throwing a splitter way more than he ever has and just absolutely took off. And I don't think another organization is going to take a long time to figure out how to get the best out of Kyle Finnegan. Maybe if he goes back to the Nationals, it's something like that. So I do think that he can still find success out of Detroit, but as you put here, Detroit native, it does make sense for Kyle Finnegan to return to the Tigers.
Yeah, and I think either way with like Will Vest, I think they're going to bring in somebody to share that role with him, or maybe not necessarily share the role, but there's going to be a competition of some sort, or you know, the way that they run that bullpen, they want to be able to use Will Vest in different spots and different times of the game, different parts of the game. So I feel like, Finnegan, if he's not the guy that returns, they'll find someone similar to Finnegan that's not going to break the bank for them, but does have some closing experience and, you know, can kind of split that role, share that role with Will Vest.
Yeah. The last bit of news we have involves the Blue Jays. They're... President of Baseball Operations Ross Atkins was asked about Jeff Hoffman being the Blue Jays closer next year, and he said the great thing about Jeff is he's not married to that. I think he would be open to anything that makes us better, and I do not like the sound of that. Rick and I were talking about this quote right before we hit record because who else is closing outside of Jeff Hoffman? You mentioned Jimmy Garcia. Louis Varland's there, and he looked really good and was relied upon heavily in the playoffs. But Jeff Hoffman's getting paid, and he was the closer last year. And despite how many home runs he gave up, he was still pretty good. I mean, the stuff is all there. But it would be very unfortunate if the Blue Jays moved in and moved him into more of a high leverage role. So hopefully they're not – the Blue Jays aren't married to the idea of Jeff Hoffman pitching outside the closer role. But that does – it did make me pause a little and express a little concern.
It's not the quote you want to hear if you're trying to roster Jeff Hoffman as your closer next year. But yeah, that is something we talked about since Hoffman signed there. It's like he's never really had closing experience. He's always been, you know, the high leverage, shutdown guy when he was in Philly. So maybe that is his best role. And if in the way he worded this, he could have easily just been like, you know, Jeff's our closer for now or whatever. But he said Jeff's not married to that. So it's like, have they already had some discussions? I don't know. I do think though that this is only if they add someone. I don't know if there's anyone internally that would make sense. Maybe Varland, if he, I mean, down the road, Varland as the closer could make sense. If Jimmy Garcia is fully healthy, but that's, you know, we didn't see him healthy much of last year, and he's like 35 next year, so
yeah.
But yeah, I wonder if this is more of a, like, you know, we're going to be in the market for a reliever. Maybe if, like, we do bring in like a Devin Williams, or even like a, like, does a Ryan Helsley type like change Hoffman's that?
I would be surprised.
Yeah,
I'd be surprised if that they'd bring in another righty too. But I know they just lost Dominguez. But
yeah, Dominguez is gone, and they are pretty set on the right side. But I don't know. This team's clearly, you know, they're just coming off a World Series. They're gonna want to keep pushing to be competitive.
Yeah. All right, that's our news. Let's move into the transactions, and here's where stuff really gets interesting. We'll start with the first one, as the Cubs traded Andrew Kittredge to the Orioles in exchange for cash considerations, which likely means the Orioles will pick up the $9 million club option if they haven't already.
They did like an hour ago.
Okay, perfect timing, perfect timing. But that's pretty big, because I know that if Andrew Kittredge was still on the Cubs, and they did exercise his option, you don't really know what the fantasy implications of that are. He's probably the top setup man there. But in Baltimore, he quickly becomes their best reliever. I mean, he's in competition with Keegan Aiken.
It's not even really close.
It's really not close. I mean, Aiken had 1 year in 2024 where he looked really good, but this past year he wasn't that good despite recording 8 saves for the O's. But with Felix Bautista out for the season and the Orioles, I wouldn't expect them to go crazy in the relief pitcher market, but I mean, they're due for some upgrades. Still, Andrew Kittredge was really good last year, especially after he signed or got traded to the Cubs. So
from the Orioles.
A good opportunity for Kittredge to close there. That's right. I forgot.
Yeah, so the Orioles. Yeah, the Orioles got a prospect for Kittredge and basically got him back for
cash. Weird.
So, yeah, it was legit. Like, talk about a rental. It's like, here, you can have Kittredge for a couple
months. You want to borrow him.
Yeah, you can borrow Kittredge. The playoff run. And he was awesome for Chicago when he was there. I mean, again, we just talked about how the Cubs are just, like, not bringing back anyone. They're not going after anyone. It's like, then why don't you just hold on to Andrew Kittredge? Unless there was some sort of, like, handshake deal where, like, we were going to trade him back to you at the end of the season.
That seems so weird.
Yeah, I know. It does. But, like, because Kittredge fits in, like, that's $9 million, not a crazy number. Even though we'll talk about it more with all these other options and things, it does feel like the reliever market's going to be pretty. Money's not going to be blown on a lot of relievers, because there's so many relievers in free agency that I feel like a lot of guys are going to get paid less than what we thought. But still, Kittredge at $9 million is definitely. I mean, he was one of the. I mean, there's an argument to be made. He was the second best reliever over the second half last year. So
35% strikeout minus walk rate for Kittredge with the Cubs.
Yeah, and it's just crazy. Right now in Baltimore, he's easily the closer. And yeah, like, do they add. I mean, they spent money on him and Sir Anthony Dominguez last year, and like, so maybe they have Kittredge, and maybe they go spend like 8 to 10 million on someone else, and then they kind of, between Kittredge and whoever they bring in, figure it out in the 8th and 9th, and then you got Aiken and Cano and everyone else leading up to that. They definitely need another reliever. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be someone to push Kittredge out of the closer role?
All right. Next, we have another big one as the Rays declined their $11 million club option on Pete Fairbanks, the closer for the Rays the past couple of years. Fairbanks will now enter the free agent market. It's half really surprising and half not that surprising. I mean, the Rays have got to be confident in their ability to replace Fairbanks, who has taken some steps back since his breakout a few years ago. He's not the elite strikeout arm he was before, but he was a very serviceable reliever for them over the past couple of years and had been performing well in the closer role. But having acquired guys like Brian Baker and Griffin Jacks last year at the trade deadline, it sort of makes sense that they feel confident in the bullpen that they have. But why not try to trade Fairbanks last year? Why not try to pick up that option and trade Fairbanks this offseason?
Yeah.
I don't know why they wouldn't do that, but now he'll hit free agency and open up the closer role in Tampa Bay. And right now, I think Edwin Uceda's the top guy there, but there's so many guys there, it could be anybody. And they may return back to doing the closer committee that they made famous.
These, like, yeah, it's just these three, this these three, like, transactions between Kittredge, Fairbanks, and the next one, which is Jose Alvarado making $9 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, how is Pete Fairbanks? I mean, $11 million, I feel like a lot of team, not a lot, but there's a team out there that's going to take him on for $11 million this year for 1 year.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have moved him. Maybe it just wasn't worth, like, they probably wouldn't have gotten a lot for him, but, like, you know, there's still,
yeah, somebody who's going to take it for $11 million. Clogs up the 40 man.
Yeah, like, or cash. I don't know. Like, just, yeah, it this wasn't even on my radar. I considered him, like, a lock at $11 million for that option to be picked up. I thought he might get traded, but
yeah, at some point in the season or in the offseason.
Yeah.
Even. Yeah.
So now, yeah, now, I mean, Fairbanks, for someone that they've talked about trading for a while, they get nothing for him. They just, you know, decline his option and don't get any return. And yeah, there's, you know, he just slots in. There's like now 8 or 9 like closers in free agency that have, you know, legit closing experience, but are they going to be able to find a role where they can continue to close? That's going to be interesting to see. So Fairbanks could be a guy who settles into a, you know, a holds or a setup role somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, $11 million. And yeah, and in Tampa Bay for now, it's Uceda or Jax, probably, with Baker kind of being that third option in the background. But,
right. And I mean, Clevenger's there too, and he's,
yeah,
was incredible last year. And even Mason Montgomery, yeah, is still around.
If Montgomery has a really good spring, if things start to, yeah, I mean, I could see him like taking over the role by May. That's
mm-hmm.
not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, because the way they like Uceda in that certain role where I don't know if they would put him in the closer role full time, but I don't know what they like. Like, what is their plans with Griffin Jacks? I think once we know,
right, if he's going to enter the rotation,
is he going to enter the rotation? Do they see him as just like a one inning closer? He's never really had a chance to close because he's had Duran in front of him in Minnesota. But yeah, I mean, those two guys definitely, Uceda and Jacks, can be really, really good closers. And if one of them gets the role, then yeah, that's a top 10 closer easily. So let's just see. I mean, does Tampa Bay go back to just being really annoying and we're never going to, they're just going to mix and match?
Mm-hmm.
They could go back to that. You know, it's been a minute, but they have that ability to annoy fantasy managers.
Right. All right. So that's going to be a situation to watch this offseason, the Rays bullpen. The next big one we have, so you hinted at, the Phillies picked up the $9 million club option on southpaw Jose Alvarado. This was pretty surprising because despite his success early last season, he did serve a 60-game PED suspension. So pretty substantial absence for Alvarado. But the Phillies bullpen, I think, could use Alvarado. It's just at $9 million seems a bit hefty. He's been good throughout his career, but he's also been inconsistent with his command. And you never really know which version of Alvarado you're going to get. Last year, they got a really good version of him where he cut his walk rate. Like, his career walk rate is 12.8%. He cut it in half, more than in half, with a 6% walk rate last year. And I don't think you can expect that going into the next season because pretty much only because of the PED suspension.
I was
going to
say, how was he after the PED suspension?
That is a good point.
So, I think... you know, $9 million for Alvarado versus $9 million for Kittredge. I would rather Kittredge. But then, like, just the $2 million for Pete Fairbanks is just like, I mean, that's just, and, right. and it's obviously different teams, and the Rays aren't, you know, the Rays are the Rays, the Phillies are the Phillies. The Phillies have the capital to, you know, throw that $9 million at mm-hmm. Jose Alvarado and hope you get the better of his seasons and not, you know, one of his high walk rate seasons. But yeah, I feel like after the PED, when he came back, he wasn't that good. I don't know. He didn't really pitch much, but I thought the PED thing would have been enough to be like, you know, we'll move on. We have Matt Strom here already. We have Tanner Banks. We can probably add another lefty for fairly cheap. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I guess there aren't many lefty free agents that are that good, so maybe that'll be the reason. Maybe that's the reason why they went for Alvarado here. They didn't think they'd be able to compete with the other teams for the rest of the.
That's true. The lefties are lefty relievers. Yeah, that's a good point.
He did walk 3 batters in 6 innings down the stretch after returning from the suspension. He had a 7.5 ERA and a 10% walk rate. So. Who knows? Who knows what Alvarado's going to look like? I think he's going to be solid. He's just not going to be the like elite closer he was to open the season last year.
If you're the Phillies, you have the money to spend on this, right. And you're the Rays, you don't have $11 million. So yeah, it's I get it, but it's just like from a pure numbers and name standpoint, it's a little weird.
All right, we can keep this next one quick, but the Reds declined their $6.5 million club option on Scott Barlow. They had to pay him $1 million for the buyout. Barlow was pretty solid last year, but I don't think Barlow's going to be somebody who's fantasy relevant next year, but it does continue to clear up space in the Reds bullpen. I'm still excited about a lot of the names coming out of Cincinnati. Yeah. I mean, Connor Phillips was sort of standing out on a lot of the stat leaderboards that I was looking at. And you like Graham Ashcraft, and Tony Santion appears to be set up for the closer, and Zach Maxwell, Big Sugar, seems really cool, and Yosfer Zulueta throws hard, and there's just so many options there in Cincinnati. So maybe we'll see somebody emerge out of there as a true, true breakout reliever.
Yeah, I think Barlow, this one makes sense. Either 5 years, saving $5.5 million. He was not bad for Cincinnati, but probably not much of a trade market for him. And yeah, there's other relievers there to be a little bit more excited about. I still think they'll go out and get somebody as well because you know they're losing Emilio Pagan, so either they bring him back or replace him somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, Connor Phillips, big good name to watch for next year. We talked about him today in the.
Oh, I missed it.
Yeah, he was one of the names to watch. He had an unbelievable second half in the bullpen for them. So, yeah, there's guys there, and especially if they add someone better than Scott Barlow.
All right. Well, before we move forward, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen live from First Pitch, Arizona. We are continuing to run through the transactions from the past couple of weeks before we discuss the conclusion of the 2025 World Series. Let's talk about some Braves options as they declined their $7 million club option on Pierce Johnson, as well as their $5.5 million club option on Tyler Kinley. Pretty surprising, as the combination of those moves only saves the team $11.5 million, and both of them were really solid pitchers for them last year. I mean, they acquired Kinley at the trade deadline, and it was weird at the time because the Braves were so far out of contention. It was like, okay, maybe this is a play for the next year. But Kinley had a 0.72 ERA in 25 innings. It was a 4.37 xFIP. So, I mean,
that trade makes absolutely no sense now.
Right. Why did you do that? Yeah. Who was that for?
Were you hoping he would allow zero earned runs? Yeah. Like, was that the point? Was that the plan?
A couple of earned runs was too much.
Having an ERA under 125 innings was just, it was too much for $5 million for him. So.
And Pierce Johnson was pretty solid for them as well. I mean, low threes ERA, 1.20 whip and a 17% strikeout minus walk rate. Not spectacular, but now there is nobody in that Braves bullpen. It's like Joe Jimenez coming off a significant injury and missing the whole season. And then Aaron Bummer and Dylan Lee. And, you know, you could say Deisbel Hernandez, but we all know he was really lucky this past year. So it's looking bleak for the Braves bullpen, but maybe they have their eyes set on different relievers than the ones they had options on.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of these other teams, and the Mets are in a similar boat. The whole the NL East is kind of interesting. You have, like, the Mets and the Braves are going to have to kind of rebuild their bullpens from scratch almost. I mean, that includes, like, Edwin Diaz being re-signed. That's right. Not really scratch, but you know what I mean. But the Phillies, like, you just go back to the Phillies, like, you have Alvarado at $9 million, or you could have Kinley and Pierce Johnson for $11.5 million. Like, that's, I don't know, just, like, the way the numbers work, it's always fascinating to me because I feel like Kinley was always going to be pretty good, like pretty interesting once he got out of Colorado. And they traded for him. And I'm like, we talked about it. It was like, it kind of makes sense because that team option is pretty reasonable. Like, they'll probably pick that up. But they didn't. Between that and I know Kim wasn't even.
Yeah, Hassan Kim.
Kim wasn't even, like, it was a player option. So those two guys that they kind of added, you know, down the stretch when they were already out of it, and they're both gone now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of weird to see what's going on in Atlanta. At least Kinley, I thought, was a lock. Pierce Johnson was a little bit more fringy, but still.
Right. $5.5 million for Kinley.
Yeah, so and the bio year. Was like a $750K, so it brings it down to.
I don't get it.
Yeah,
I don't get it. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of the Mets, they did the opposite of the Braves. They saw how bereft their bullpen was of relievers you can count on, reliable relievers, and they said, "Hey, we got to keep their guys." So they kept Brooks Raley on a $4.75 million club option, and then. I don't want to say they got lucky, but AJ Minter opted in on his contract, and unsurprisingly, Edwin Diaz opted out to test free agency. I would not be surprised if he returns to Queens, but Minter returning makes sense. He missed most of last season with injury, but I think the Mets will be happy with that. I mean, he only pitched 11 innings, but he did have a sub-2 ERA, and he's been one of the best relievers in baseball throughout his career, to be honest, and one of the quietest good relievers in baseball, pitching mostly for the Braves throughout his career. So they got to be happy that they'll have both those veteran lefties returning, and there's still a lot of work to be done on that bullpen.
Yeah, look, Adbert Alzolay listed as the setup guy there right now. That's fun. But it would be cool to see him come back and do something next year. But yeah, if I feel like from a left-handed standpoint, they're pretty, you know, they're set, I think, for the most part here with Minter and Raley. and they even have some depth there with, you know, Jose Castillo, Richard Lovelady, Brandon Waddell. They have to go out and I would probably say get three righties in free agency or free trade, at least, just to kind of fill out the rest of that bullpen. But Diaz or similar is going to be. If it's not Diaz, they'll get it. Like, you know, the next they'll get a closer in free agency, no doubt. I think Minter. It's a little high price for Minter, but yeah, he was good, and you know, he hasn't been able to stay healthy the last couple of years. But they've been kind of they're not arm issues for the most part. It's been and that might not be better, but it's like the lat keeping him out of all last year. I feel like that's something he should be able to come back from and be like his normal self this year. I hope so. Yeah, he'll be in the mix for holds there for sure, and someone to look at in holds leagues.
All right, another big opt out. Robert Suarez opted out of his contract with the Padres. That one I think we saw coming. He's got like the most saves in baseball over the past 2 years. He's been excellent for the Padres, and I think he clearly saw that he's not the top dog in San Diego, so he should get himself a pretty solid contract. It's not going to be an obscene amount, but he should get himself a few years if that's what he wants. I think it's good news for the Padres because they have so many guys in that bullpen, and somebody like Mason Miller, who is primed to be a huge closer for them, and set up men like Adrian Morejon and Jeremiah Estrada and Jason Adam at some point to support him. So I don't think anybody was surprised about this, and I don't think either party is going to be upset about the result.
Yeah, I think, you know, it opens up some money for San Diego and gives, you know, Suarez should find a closer role somewhere. Again, he's in that tier of, like, Fairbanks, and, you know, it's like they're good enough to land closer roles, but, like, what teams are going to spend money on a closer this offseason? That's
right.
So it's like if they have to take, you know, a one-year deal, like, again, like, the Dodgers are going to probably just load up on, like, this seems like it's turning into be, like, a very good situation for the Dodgers adding relievers, like similar to how they added Kirby Yates and Tanner Scott. It's like they'll just pick some guys up in January who aren't having this type of interest that they thought they would, and yeah, it could be some of these closers, but I don't know. Either way, Suarez gets a chance to start somewhere. I mean, he's going to close somewhere else. It won't be in San Diego. I doubt he returns. But yeah, it'll be interesting to watch.
All right. Lastly, Liam Hendricks had his club option declined by the Red Sox. So the short tenure for the right-hander is coming to an end in Boston. He has thrown just 18 and two-thirds innings over the past three seasons, and I would not be surprised if he calls it a career here. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't blame him if he wants to sort of finish strong after dealing with all the injuries and cancer and all the stuff he's gone through over the past few years. I would not blame him to want to try to make some sort of comeback and see the field one more time. But yeah, pretty sad end to Hendricks' career in Boston.
I think he's at that, like, kind of Craig Kimbrell was. I mean, yeah. Maybe, you know, where, like, he'll probably get, like, an invite or, like, a chance to sign, maybe get a minor league look. Maybe if he shows well, he'll get another chance at the majors. But yeah, what we've seen from him over, you know, the past couple of years, it just isn't the Liam Hendricks of old, where, you know, he can really be trusted as a setup or closer. So yeah, we'll see. I hope he can, you know, manufacture some sort of comeback. But at his age, I'm not sure.
All right, well, that's the news and transactions from the past couple of weeks. Before we get into our main topic, let's sort of wrap up the 2025 season by discussing the conclusion of the playoffs, culminating in, as usual, the World Series. And we saw the Dodgers, my hated Dodgers, take on the Toronto Blue Jays. And man, that might have been the best World Series we have ever seen and maybe will ever see. Just like the 18-inning game alone and Game 7, those two games by themselves were good enough. But, I mean, Game 6 was really good, and there were plenty of other moments throughout this series that made it must-watch TV. Any moments you want to talk about before I sort of set us up for things to discuss?
I mean, this World Series or 2016, but I think I might give the edge to this World Series because there were some wild... Yeah, there was... more just like memorable wild
moments. I only remember Game 7 from 2016, and I think a lot of what happened in 2016 was like the 3-1 comeback and then the Cubs breaking the long streak, like that held a lot of weight.
Sure.
But I don't remember the individual games outside of that.
I just remember, like Game 7 mostly, and like Rajay Davis.
Yeah.
but yeah, there's this, I mean, it was. Every game is pretty entertaining for the most part. Mm-hmm. We're not Dodger fans here, but yeah, it's the way they won with just, you know, that they're four starters and like
that was it.
We'll piece it together in the bullpen. This was not a good World Series indictment for bullpens because their bullpen was not good.
Yeah.
No one could be trusted. I mean, Will Klein was their best reliever in the one game he pitched. It's like Roky Sasaki was not good in this World Series. There's no way to really cut that. He didn't allow any runs, but that was very lucky. And yeah, they they really did not want to go to him in Game 7. He was warming down at the end of that game, but it's like you just got to stick with Yamamoto at that point, because Sasaki or even Kershaw, that, like, that's so, like, you're going to put that, your Game 7, you're going to put the line, put that on the line with mm-hmm. Sasaki and his splitter control or lack thereof. Yeah, this, looking at the bullpen numbers from the series, the Dodgers, not good. And even, like, the Blue Jays bullpen wasn't great either. You know, Varlin and Dominguez, like, kind of kept it together for the most part, but they weren't that good.
Well, Dominguez gave up that game-tying homer to Ohtani. Well,
that, yeah.
Yeah, you can't throw one right down the middle. I mean,
that was, like, that was a very interesting managerial decision. Yeah, that whole... It felt like that was, like, bound to happen once I'm like, all right, you're going to have Sir Anthony Dominguez. I think I tweeted something about him. Like, this is, like, the biggest part of the lineup here.
Yeah.
I thought they, like, Jeff Hoffman might be an option. It was the seventh inning, and, like, but yeah, I think you want to save Hoffman for the ninth. I are sure, whatever. But, like, yeah, looking at the number, I mean, Justin Wroblewski was awesome again.
If he's going to be in the bullpen next year, I mean, he's pretty interesting. He was, like, pumping 100.
He might be there. He might be, like, the heir apparent to Alex Vesia, who's, I think Vesia's got one more year.
Yeah, well, they picked up his, they had a club option.
Yeah,
they
picked it up. So. I think the Wroblewski's the long-term lefty option. But, I mean, Jack Dreyer is still pretty good, too, there. They just churn out good pitching. It's nuts. But, yeah, then, we'll see Sir Anthony Dominguez probably on a different team next year. I don't know what his role will be. But, yeah, the guys who pitched, like, you know, 4+ games that series, like, mm-hmm. Dominguez, like, coming in every time. It's like, oh, man, his command was never locked in. It was just dicey.
It's weird how good the Blue Jays bullpen was during the regular season and how shaky
Brandon Little was terrible this whole season. And, like, what happened to him?
It's because he's, like, so ground ball reliant that if it's, like, his bat, if it's bad, and he walks everybody.
Yeah, his walk rates were bad.
But, like, Braden Fisher, he didn't stand out to me after being a guy with a 31% strikeout rate and a sub-3 ERA.
Yeah.
And, like, Louis Varland's stuff was really good, but he wasn't, like, electric or anything. And the fact that somebody like Sir Anthony Dominguez, who's been so reliable for multiple years and multiple teams, just was, like, a non-factor for them in the postseason. And then, like, I mean, Jeff Hoffman's so home run reliant, but to give up a home run to Miguel Rojas with two outs to go to win the World Series, I mean, that Game 7 was probably the best game I've ever watched.
Yeah.
It just had everything.
Yeah, I had people texting me that don't even watch baseball.
I was watching it with people that don't watch baseball. And it was like they were all enthralled. I had one Dodgers fan, too. So, you know, she got the last laugh there. It was an incredible game from start to finish. I mean, Ohtani getting knocked out early, like crazy defensive plays. The bench is clearing. That ninth inning was one of the wildest innings I've ever seen in my entire life. I couldn't even stay seated. And then all the chances that the Jays had to win the game. Oh, my gosh. It was just, it had literally everything. I couldn't have asked for a better game. I could have asked for a better finish. Yeah. But, I cannot stand to see the Dodgers win another World Series. But, man, you did mention. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I have kind of a, like, I know you hate the Dodgers, I get it, but, like, I kind of like having that, like, that villain, that, like, bad.
Yeah, but see, we can have that without them winning.
Yeah, I know, but they have to establish themselves.
Sure. Well, now everybody will see them as a villain. And so, I don't think they had that before winning back-to-back.
Yeah, winning back-to-back
establishes. The first time since the Yankees in 98, 99, 2000.
They're starting to get into that, like, dynasty talk.
Well, definitely. I mean, they've won 3 in 6 years. I think that constitutes a dynasty.
Is it really 3? But, yeah.
Hey, I'm on your side.
Yeah. But who do you who do you think the best reliever was this series for Toronto? And there's a clear cut. There's a pretty clear. I mean, Jeff Hoffman was solid outside of the Rojas home run, but Chris Bassitt was like,
yes.
I mean, is that his future? Is that,
like, I don't think so.
Yeah, I know he should return to the rotation. But, yeah, I mean, he did look good.
The movement on his pitches is pretty bonkers. But yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a closer anywhere. I don't think a team is going to take somebody with, like, that amount of stamina and put him in the bullpen. But yeah, I mean, he did have, like, he just looked really confident out there. He would, like, go out there and just, like, front door sinkers and
Yeah. They talked about him. I think someone on the broadcast was talking about how he was, I'm trying to pull up where he was, a closer. Oh, he was a closer at single A when he was coming through.
Oh, weird.
But he did have a little relief experience in the minors.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was fun to see him just dominate really in the bullpen.
I mean, all the talk for the Dodgers was around Will Klein based on his four inning performance.
Five. And, or was it four?
It was four.
Four.
In game three, the 18 inning game where he earned the win. And I do just want to say, we talked about him. we've talked about him for a while.
He was released, we're like, yeah, this is an interesting
guy.
On
the Royals, he was on the A's, and I kept mentioning, hey, this guy's got good stuff. And then the Dodgers acquired him for nothing. It was Joe Jock or something. That was it in June. They acquired him, and it was just a very quiet deal. But I said, the fact that they just got him for free, because Joe Jock is 30-something-year-old reliever. He's not anything. I think he's just a lefty. I was pretty upset because I knew down the line they were going to do something with Will Klein, and it was going to upset me. And that's exactly what happened, because he came in and he looked so good. And
to be fair, that Blue Jays lineup by the time he came in,
oh my
god,
it was so frustrating to watch. Yeah. It was Vladdy, and then just IKF was every single batter.
Yeah.
It was IKF, Miles Straw. Just it felt like they were switching off
that. The catcher Tyler Heineman.
It was
Miles
terrible.
Straw. Yeah, Miles
it was
Straw.
So
IKF
bad.
Should not be.
And they just
World
couldn't.
Series.
They could not do anything.
Batter's box.
It was It was really frustrating to watch. But I mean, credit to him. He threw 65. He threw 70 pitches, and I was how is this happening? How is this one inning reliever?
And we talked this Dodger bullpen is kind of there's a lot of unknown about it next year. Mm-hmm. If he does stick around, they could sign a bunch of guys and end up DFAing him, or he could stick around and be a part of this bullpen at some point. So, someone to keep it. If he does stay there and get a spot, he's definitely interesting. This stuff's always been intriguing. That's why he keeps getting chances. So, he's still relatively young. It's not like we can. It's not Roynsy Contreras, who keeps just not working out everywhere.
Uh-huh.
But he's Klein still is, and he's got an option, so he might stick in AAA for a little bit, and they got some options with him.
Yeah, we also didn't see a lot of Edgardo Henriquez, and he still has control issues, but man, that guy throws harder than anybody except for Mason Miller and Ben Joyce. He's got a huge fastball. He averaged 101 basically on the season. 2.37 ERA during the regular season. I feel like he's another guy that's
he's still 23.
They have so many good pitchers
in
Hollywood.
He's 23 with two options. He'll be up and down next year again.
But he's really good too.
Yeah.
So they got everybody. Unfortunate end to the World Series. It was a very fun watch. We've been talking about it off and on throughout the first couple days here at First Pitch Arizona with all the boys. So it was definitely a good time, but didn't end. It really looked like they had it. They were up 3-2.
And then Miggy Rowe had to do what he did, and then we all knew that the Dodgers were winning the World Series once he hit that home run.
So
to be honest.
So tough.
But now it's time to move on. We got to move past it. The Dodgers won again.
That's right.
It's a new year coming.
All right. Well, next we'll head into our main topic, but first we'll take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham discussing relief pitchers. We'll be comparing our top 40 relief pitchers for the 2026 season. It's early in the year, so at this point it's pretty futile ranking any baseball player, but especially relief pitchers since they're so reliant on their role. It's you can rank the top 10. Mm. And then it's all right, here's your best guess.
Yeah.
But let's just dive right into it. I mean, we discussed a little bit in the last podcast the rankings and how the top 9 is pretty much just the same guys interchangeable. So we didn't have any difference in our ranking that was greater than 2 spots. So I'll just read the names. It was Mason Miller, Edwin Diaz, Aroldis Chapman, Cade Smith, Josh Hader, Devin Williams, Andrés Muñoz, Yoan Duran, and David Bednar. That was the top 10. Those were all, pretty solid.
And McGill's kind of on the...
Right. You had McGill at 10. I had McGill at 11. So I don't think there's any qualms there. It's just about whether or not you think Amir Ribe is going to eat into his save opportunities, or if that injury that ended his season early is going to have an effect on him. So we'll see how that postseason usage affects the 2026 usage of that Brewers bullpen. But for now, it's like McGill's pretty set in the top 10. But as we move forward, Pete Fairbanks at 11. We already discussed
his now he needs option. To go down.
So my question is, where does he go? Because I had Fairbanks four spots lower than 15. You. You had him at 11. I had him at 15. But now I think I would lower him a little bit more because he will be a free agent. I have like free agents like, I don't know, Kenley Jansen at 23. You have him at 24. I feel like around there is solid, around 25.
I like him more than like Jansen or... So I actually kind of like what you have with like Fairbanks at 15, Suarez at 16. That's not, I mean, I might put Suarez a little bit ahead of Fairbanks now. Oh, I don't know. I have them back to back, but like I was expecting Fairbanks to either close in Tampa Bay or get traded somewhere.
I think I would put Suarez over Fairbanks. I mean, the strikeout potential seems better than Fairbanks because he's a different pitcher than he was a couple of years ago when he was striking out 40% of batters.
Fairbanks was good in the second half, though. He turned back the clock.
But there's no guarantee he's closing, and I feel like Suarez is like all but guaranteed to close because he does have the most saves in baseball over the past couple of years, and it feels like maybe that's something he prioritizes, is being a closer. Again, he's got closer stuff.
Yeah. And with Fairbanks, too, just like the weird outside of the box thing is like the whole Reynolds syndrome.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So I feel like he's got to go either somewhere that's got a, you know, in pitching inside for April and potentially October, or like it's, you know, warm weather climate.
So maybe closer to 20, not 25.
That kind of like narrows down the teams.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So like, does he go, maybe he goes West Coast. But yeah, there's, I'm just trying like what West, like maybe, he, I mean the Rays or the Dodgers love taking guys from the Rays. Fairbanks there as a potential setup guy or closer, you know, depending on what Tanner Scott does.
There's Arizona?
Arizona, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a good one. If they, I don't know, or even go back to Texas now that he's a free agent. That's where he came from. Texas could use him. That's
not a bad one. From Missouri. Or no, he went to school in Missouri. I don't know where he was born.
There's a lot of teams that could. Yeah, I mean, now I'm thinking about it. Like, a lot of the teams that need closers are kind of warm weather climates.
He's or lucky. I think around 20. I think if we drop him, like, you know, from your ranking, like 10 spots about.
I think he's still in the top 20.
Okay.
I put him above Pagan still.
Okay.
Suarez, so he's wherever Suarez is, he's probably right near there.
Okay. So. All right. Well, speaking of Suarez, you had him at 12. I had him at 16. I think that's because I more heavily weigh the uncertainty in his role and also sort of doubt a little bit his dominance, because he's always been somebody that does outproduce his underlying metrics. I mean, he had a 3.33 xFIP this past year, which really good.
Yeah.
But he did have a sub 3 ERA over the past 2 years, and I think if we do over the past 2 years, 3.5 xFIP. So he's out pitching those, and there was the concern about, like, is he just going to be a fastball pitcher? And then he reintroduced the changeup last year. So
the changeup's been like, it's like appeared and like disappeared every other season.
Right.
So we'll see where he lands and like what the pitching philosophy is there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I think. He's got enough, like, the last two years, the save numbers should get him a chance to close out games somewhere. That was a really kind of cushy situation in San Diego where you had, like, elite guys getting the ball to you. Hitters were, you know, it's, I don't know how much of a factor this is, but just thinking about, like, hitters facing all those guys and then, like, they come into the ninth inning, like, after getting beaten by, like, Mason Miller and Jeremiah Estrada and Adrian Morejon and Jason Adam the past four or five innings. It's like, you know, I don't know. It's going to be a different situation. That's why anytime, you know, closers on the move, always I'm a little bit skeptical or a little bit down on them their first year in a new place until we kind of get a sense of what, you know, how they react or how they work there. Because let's look at the closers, and like Jeff Hoffman had a bad first season. Tanner Scott had a bad first season this year in a new spot. Trying to look at who else. I mean, Carlos Estevez didn't, but that's just weird. Aroldis yeah. Chapman didn't, but that's also kind of weird.
Yeah. Situation. I think it's
Devin
like
Williams in his first year in New York didn't work out.
Right. I think Robert Suarez, it's like if he's not a closer with little competition, it's like his fantasy relevance is out
there. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. he's even in like, as a holds guy, he's still kind of interesting, but
sure.
not like,
yeah,
I don't
know
if
he's
not like
in the saves league.
10. Yeah.
No. Yeah. So I think there's not a huge difference there, but the fact that there, we had four spots, I think it was worth yeah. talking about. So as we moved down the list, it was Raisel Iglesias we both had at 13, Tanner Scott, we had a two-pick difference. Jeff Hoffman, you had at 15 and I had at 10, and I think I was weighing very heavily his ceiling and also the security of his role, which after talking to Ross Atkins doesn't seem to be as secure as I perceived it to be. But Jeff Hoffman, to me, is like one of the few guys you can guarantee to have a 30% strikeout rate and
yeah.
a lot of saves, because we saw 33 saves from him last year. And the ERA was terrible, but hey, this was one of the most unlucky pitchers in baseball
yeah.
last year because of how many home runs he served up. So I think if he gets better luck in that department, he's very quickly, at the very
which
least, a top 12 reliever.
Yeah.
So I had him at 10, which I probably should have McGill above him, but I like the fact that I didn't see anybody in the Blue Jays bullpen that would surpass him. So I felt really confident that, okay, this guy's got no competition, mm-hmm. a lot of strikeout potential, and is going to have better ratios next year. Like, I don't want anybody else. Like, it's a perfect recipe.
Yeah, Nick made a comment to me today. He thought I had Hoffman too low as well. So
what does he know?
You stick to starters, buddy. but like, yeah, now like looking at this grouping right here now with Fairbanks being a free agent, like the Fairbanks, Suarez, Iglesias, Tanner Scott, Jeff Hoffman group, and it's almost like in a way all of those guys I feel like have a 70% chance to close out games, but
mm-hmm.
like it's not a certainty for almost
right.
any of them. Especially with what we just learned about Jeff Hoffman today. So this is an interesting group, and it almost makes me now want to push like what we learned about the Cubs, maybe push Palencia up above.
Yeah.
Like now I think Palencia might belong at like 11 if you want to be a little bit
sure.
safe, because it does seem like he's gonna be the closer in Chicago.
Right. If they're
not
gonna bring in anybody,
yeah,
there's no
not even
absolutely no
discussion about it.
Yeah.
So I feel like Palencia gets a big boost if I were to re-update these today.
Uh-huh.
I think Palencia kind of leapfrogs everyone up until McGill. So you
yeah.
put Palencia 11. And then, yeah, this group of Fairbanks, Suarez, Iglesias, Scott, Hoffman, like very tons of upside, very interesting. What's the role going to be?
Right. All right. Moving forward, you mentioned
Will
Palencia.
Vest could almost be in that too.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's
Don,
another
yeah.
one where it's like you can't trust AJ Hinch.
Yeah.
So moving down your list, Palencia, Pagan, we had slight differences there. I think that's fine. I think we both
spots,
have Daniel
yeah.
Palencia similar spots if we re-rank these right now. Pagan is also just like, okay, where does he pitch? He's
yeah,
going to have
he's
a lot
in
of
that, he can be in there, but I don't think the upside's the same
right.
as like Hoffman or Scott.
Yeah.
yeah.
Will Vest, Jose Ferrer, Carlos Estevez, we had like one spot different from each other, so I think those are pretty safe around 18, 19, 20 there. And then we move to Ryan Helsley, who you had at 21 and I had at 28, so a significant difference of seven spots there. And for me, it was not only the uncertainty of his role, where is he going to pitch, is he going to be allowed to close, but also he really struggled at the end of last season. It is not something that we've seen from him a lot, and it seems like something he could fix, and maybe he did fix right before the end of the season. I don't know if he was tipping, if he had some sort of injury, or if
mm-hmm.
it was just like a mechanics thing, or maybe it was just his first time pitching out of St. Louis and, you know, having to deal with that scenery change. But are you just really confident that Helsley's going to get a closer role and sort of lock back into the version of himself that we saw over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think, I was talking to like Nate Schwartz, who's here with us, who's a big Cardinals guy, and he's high on Helsley going into next year,
because
mm-hmm. he thinks, it did seem like Helsley did figure things out the last like 2 weeks of the year, but also, and I don't know what the actual numbers are, but he was saying how like Helsley, and outside of the ninth inning, Helsley really has never performed well. He's always kind of just been like, he's one of those, we talked about it with like is a Johan Duran, kind of just like
mm-hmm.
a guy who like ninth inning save situation, He's like, that's where he's rock solid. But like outside of that, it's like a little bit different. Whatever it is, like attitude wise or mentally, he just works better as a closer. So I think Helsley, like the good thing about him and where it's different from like, if you want to compare him to who, like Jordan Romano last year, Romano was hurt and like the stuff kind of dissipated a little bit. With Helsley, the stuff still held all year. Good stuff plus numbers. It's just, yeah, there was clearly some tipping going on when he got to New York, and just, yeah, that whole mentality of working the eighth inning is a little bit different. It does play a role. So I think Helsley, I don't know, again, there's so many reliever free agents or closer, potential closer free agents. I don't know if Helsley's going to be able to get a closer role somewhere. Mm-hmm. But if he does, I do. Like, I like that upside more than, you know, some of the other guys left on this list. And I feel like he's got a better chance to close out games than, you know, Ryan Walker or Phil Maton, Brad Keller, other free agents, Tony Santillan. Dennis Santana is, like, one where Santana's going to close for the first half of the year, sure. Is it going to be worth it? Like, is it good enough to...
Where he's definitely getting traded.
I'd rather take a chance on Helsley at that point than... Yeah.
That's fair. That is fair. If he does close, I definitely would bump him up the ranks pretty significantly, probably close to the top 15, definitely inside the top 20. I think you had him right on the fringe of the top 20, so that's what makes sense. Yeah. Dennis Santana, we had 3-spot difference. I think that's pretty negligible. Ryan Walker, 4-spot difference. I think pretty similar as well. Kenley Jansen, just 1 spot.
I think I'm too high on Walker, too. I would probably push him down.
Yeah, he just did not have it last year, and I do feel like the Giants are going to address that bullpen. But, like, you know, can't really account for that now and just say, like, I expect them to bring somebody else in. But it makes sense, if not some people behind him.
Yeah.
And then they could possibly take over the role. I mean, Joel Piguero, he's really dope, stuff, I think. Yeah.
Stuff Plus
loves him. I think if he has an opportunity, which I don't expect because he's so young.
He's not that young, but yeah.
Well, he's in his major league career. Okay, Kenley Jansen, we had just a 1-spot difference. But then Ronnie Henriquez, I had 6 spots above you. You had him at 25. I had him at 19. And I think this is sort of the inverse of the Ryan Helsley thing where I'm accounting for a role change ahead of time and just saying, like, Ronnie Henriquez's stuff is so good. He was such a good reliever last year that, like, even if Calvin Fauché's solid or if he's still around or they use Calvin Fauché mostly in the closer role, I have so much faith in Henriquez not only providing value in the same role that he had last year, but also just forcing the Marlins' hand and forcing them to use him as the closer, because I don't have faith in Calvin Fauché being good again next year, and then there's nobody else in that bullpen. So Ronnie Henriquez does also have the ceiling of, if he is a full-time closer, like, he's near in the top 10. He was so good last year.
Yeah, if they were to come out and say that he's their closer to enter the year, I would probably have him at, like, 12 right now. At least. But, yeah, there's... I could see moving him into, like, closer to 20, but I don't know, getting him inside of the top 20 might be hard at this point. But once those free agents, like, there's that group of free agents in the teens, like, once those guys start landing jobs that aren't closer jobs, then they're going to fall down, and Henriquez will get a chance to move up. Because, Fauché was pretty good last year, and he probably opens the year as a closer, but... either way, and this is part of what we talked about today, is like Henriquez was still he's still a top 30 reliever in fantasy baseball last year in saved only leagues. Like, he pitches a lot, he gets a lot of usage, so there's innings there, there's wins, there's strikeouts, there's good ratios, and everything, all the metrics back it up. So big fan of Ronnie Henriquez. I think he'll be a bargain. I don't think he's, unless they do name him the closer, like, I don't see him being drafted as, like, a top 20, 25 reliever. No. So, yeah, there's going to be it's a fun late round flyer. Sleeper. Yeah, fun late round, you know, once you get to, like, pick 250 on, like, that's a guy to pencil in.
Yep. All right. Jordan Leisure was next. 2-spot difference there. Phil Maton, I had 5 spots lower than you. I think that's just, you know, the typical free agent conversation, yeah. Like whether or not you think he's going to close, because if he's not closing, he's probably not fantasy relevant
at all. He's probably not going to close either, no. But there's a chance. I don't know.
There is a chance, and that's just what it is so with free agents. It's hard to tell at this point. There's so many guys who had good seasons last year that have never really closed. If they got the opportunity, it could be dope.
Yeah.
Brad Keller's the same situation. Thing. We had him one spot apart from each other, and I think I have more faith in Brad Keller's abilities because of how freaking good he was in the second half for the Cubs. Unreal numbers there. But you know, same situation.
More of a prototypical closer too, because now he's throwing 97.
If he's Maton's not a closer though, if he's not a closer, he's not fantasy relevant really in save only league. So
yeah.
That's just how it goes with the free agents. Tony Santion, we had a 3-spot difference. I had him above you, but I don't think any much to talk about there. Abner Uribe, though, I had 8 spots above you, and we talked about this a little bit when we discussed me drafting him in the mock draft, and that's just because his usage in the playoffs and down the stretch suggests that the Brewers not only trust him in the 9th inning, but may prefer him in the 9th inning over McGill. We didn't see that throughout all of last season, but maybe as he gets deeper into arbitration, they start to make that shift. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe it was just because McGill's injury, they felt more comfortable with Uribe in the 9th. But I think beyond that, he was one of the best relievers overall in baseball last year. And sort of same situation as Ronnie Henriquez, where it's like, even if he's not the closer, he's going to get some saves, and he's still going to be so good in the ratio and strikeout departments that he's going to be worth rostering in save-only leagues, especially in like those typical standard Yahoo leagues where just a guy with really good ratios and strikeouts is going to be worth it. So maybe I'm a little bit too high on him. 8 spots above you is pretty significant. I had him at 22. I think that's banking a lot on him getting more saves than he had last year, but I don't know. I just feel really confident in Abner Uribe at least being somebody you don't have to drop all year.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the argument. I feel like going above, like going, you know, past the top 30 for someone who's not going to, or who's not likely to close, not even like 50-50, I just feel it's tough to kind of predict that. We've only seen one good year from Uribe so far, but I mean, I'm in on him. Like as far as save plus holds goes, he's a
right beast.
You know, a top 5 guy there for sure, or a top 5, you know, holds guy at least. So yeah, the Brewers could always try to move McGill. I mean, they'd like to cut costs where they can. So who knows? Maybe Uribe gets more of a chance than we think.
Right. Next, we've got Kevin Ginkle, who I had 6 spots below you. You had him at 31. I had him at 37. There is upside here. Ginkle was really good for the few years before he imploded last year, but the whole bullpen imploded there. My concerns is like, can he get back to doing what he did before last year? And also, like, is he even going to just like be the closer? Like,
yeah,
does he? There's still other guys there that they could turn to. I mean, Roster Resource has Andrew Salafranca as the closer, disgusting. Which I think is, you know, not right. Yeah. But like Brian Thompson's even above him on the ladder there. So I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm saying the possibility of him not even being the closer or even sharing the role is there. And, you know, is he good enough? He's definitely not good enough to roster if he's not the full-time closer. So it's like if he's the full-time closer, yeah, he's going to be pretty dope. Hopefully he can return to, but if he doesn't return, it's like somebody who's like so fringy that I don't want to take him unless it's like one of my last picks.
Yeah. And my thought process originally was like, he's at least the guy of closer experience. If he's healthy, he's got the strikeout numbers too. I don't think that this Arizona team is going to, I mean, this roster's really, really bad. I mean, especially if they trade Kettle Marte, like there's been talks of. You move on from Marte, and then it's like Corbin Carroll and, yeah, Geraldo Perdomo, and, like, what else is here? I mean,
like Corbin Burns is coming
at that,
back.
Look at that rotate. Like, look at the rest of the lineup. Look at the rotation. Look at the bullpen. It's really bleak. So, yeah, Ginkle's going to be a free agent after the year. I feel like maybe they, you know, let him save games the first half, trade him, hope to get some value from him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, same thing could definitely be said about Ryan Thompson. Just feel like as we're talking about one of those two guys to close out games, I feel like Ginkle's
right
if healthy, he should have the edge.
In my opinion, there's guys that you have ranked below him that have much higher ceilings. Oh, and at for this sure. point, it's like after yeah. the 30th closer, I'm like going for somebody who can really break out and have a huge season. Moving down, Robert Garcia, we have four spots apart. I think that's just whether or not we think he's going to close. I don't think it's a skill thing. Jojo Romero, though, you had at 33. I didn't even rank him. I think for me, there's enough competition there that he may not close. They also don't have any other lefties. They got John King, but I don't think they didn't like using Romero as the clear-cut closer last year. We saw Riley O'Brien close. I think Matt Swanson outpitched what you'd expect him to do, but he was still really good. And ultimately, Jojo Romero had a 10% strikeout minus walk ratio. Like, I don't even think he's that good.
Yeah, he was...
He had the one half season where he looked really interesting, and he has not looked like that outside of there.
Yeah, both O'Brien and Romero, despite their ERAs, were like not... Those aren't guys you really want to have closing out games for you, but they got the bulk of the... I mean, they finished with 14 saves total to end the year.
Uh-huh.
That's I hope that's not their answer. Like, that's not their plan going into the season. I think that being said, I mean, Chaim Bloom's not gonna spend money on a reliever. That's not really his MO. It never has been. So if they stick within, I mean, I've been talking about Matt Swanson for a while. I would like to see him get a chance to close out games.
Mm-hmm.
And then O'Brien and Romero setting up's not terrible. You could do a lot worse with that kind of pecking order. But they did like Romero last year as the closer, despite, him giving away, 40% of his saves.
Yeah.
So it's like he gets 60% of them. I don't know. There's definitely better options out there and in that team, in that organization. So, we'll see how the things play out.
All right. Next, we had Andrew Kittredge. You had him at 34. I had him at 35. And so no difference there. But where would you rank him now that he is on the Orioles? Because he had a really good season last year. He's got no competition in that Orioles bullpen. They may bring somebody in, but right now it looks pretty clear. And I mean, if I had to make a decision right now, I'm bumping him up like near Emilio Pagan, like right outside the top 15.
He's almost, he's like, to me, the way he, the way he's so dominant in the second half.
Yeah.
He's not far. He's in that next tier right below the Scott Hoffman
place. I agree.
In that, that Pagan. Pagan vest, where like really good, not elite, but really, really good in possibly can be closing games. So,
so 17 around, or 18.
Yeah, around Pagan area.
All right. Well, sounds like Kittredge is going to be somebody that we are going to be in on, because I doubt anybody's going to be in on Andrew Kittredge, especially this early in the offseason, but who's drafting right now anyway? Next.
Tons of people tomorrow.
Yeah, sure. Next, that's right. At First Pitch Arizona, a lot of drafts.
Yeah.
Next, Ben Joyce, you had at 35. I had him at 30, and I think I'm a little bit too high on him, but that's just because, I don't know, this feels like this is like the year for him. It's like he's coming back. He says he's in the best shape of his life. He still throws, I hope he still throws 103 miles an hour.
Have we gotten the best shape of his life from him?
The last news I read about him was he said he feels like he's in the best shape of his life, which is crazy for like a 25-year-old to say. So that's pretty cool. I think he's going to be given the first shot, but there's a little bit of competition in that Angels bullpen. Regardless, I don't think the 30 to 35 difference is that substantial.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the more fun competitions. We'll see. Maybe they just sign someone. The Angels do weird things.
Well, I don't even think they need to, because they got guys like Ryan Zephyrjohn. I think Detmers is going to move to
I don't think they didn't. Rotation. I didn't think they really needed to sign Kenley Jansen, though. And they did. So
they did. But they do have Robert Stevenson. I mean, Stevenson. We have them four spots apart from each other. But I think, that's where it's going to be. It's like, I think they're pretty much, difference between them is negligible, and that's why you have them back-to-back. But it's just, like, whoever closes and who do you have more faith in closing.
In an ideal world, like, this bullpen could be, like, really good and really fun if, like, Joyce is healthy and Stevenson's healthy and Detmer stays in the bullpen.
I've been saying that.
It could be, like, an awesome bullpen.
They just need a lefty.
It's just so, I mean, they need another lefty. Brock Burke's not really it. So. No. But yeah, between Stevenson, Zephyrjohn, even like a guy like Jose Fermin, if he can figure some things out, Joyce, that's a really fun upside bullpen that just has a lot of upside and a lot of, like, the floor and ceiling are so far apart.
Right.
But it's something to dream on if they can stay healthy.
We did skip by a couple guys that I had on my list ranked before Joyce and Stevenson that you didn't rank inside your top 40. I had Brian Abreu at 33. You had him at 43, and I had Jeremiah Estrada at 34. You had him at 49. I think that's just a how do you value holds guys, because I don't think either of us are of the opinion that Abreu or Estrada is going to close. But I do think both of those guys are worth rostering because of how dominant they are as setup guys, where it's like Estrada could end up closing if Mason Miller moves to the rotation. I don't expect that to happen. And maybe Josh Hader isn't fully healthy and Abreu ends up closing. But both of those guys have just been so dominant in the strikeout department, and they're going to produce good ratios and pitch a lot for their teams, that I think they're worth rostering, especially in those standard Yahoo leagues where they're just going to, you know, give you good ratios and strikeouts just every single week, week in and week out. Moving forward, we had Kyle Finnegan one spot apart. Look at us.
we're learning.
Right. You had Grant Taylor on there. I didn't rank him at all. You had him at 38. I think that's just because I think he's not going to be a reliever. I think he's going to join the rotation. I don't know. What do you think?
Probably. If it, this is basically... Yeah, I think I've talked to a couple of people about this. Like Mike Carter, who I did my presentation with, he's a big White Sox fan. He thinks Taylor stays in the bullpen.
Interesting.
And I think our PLV projections have an interesting... They have him like kind of starting for like starting half the year and like being in the bullpen half the year. But his projections were crazy, off the charts. And that checks out because, yeah, the metrics on him are really, really promising. But the thing, it's weird because I didn't know, like, if he does stick in the bullpen, and I know Leisure was really good, but I feel like Taylor's, if he's in the bullpen, he's still, he's a tier above Leisure stuff-wise, so we'll see how that, I don't know where to rank him. Yeah, he's a tough one.
All right, and then AJ Minter you had at 39. I'm assuming you only have him there because he's, like, right now he's the closer.
The Mets just, like, whiff on everyone.
And I'm like, that's not happening.
It's probably not.
There's no way.
There's, like, a 1% chance it happens.
And if he is 1%. The closer, he's in the top 40. But,
I
was not expecting that. So I went ahead and made the decision. He's not going to be the closer. He's not in the top 40 as a setup guy. I had Luke Weaver at 39 instead. Pretty similar situation as AJ Minter, where it's like, if he's closing, Weaver can be top 40. If he's not closing, forget about him. A lot of upside there with Luke Weaver. Not as good as he was 2 years ago, 2024 in the breakout, but still pretty solid last year with the Yankees, and he was sort of overshadowed with all the drama going on there. But I do think Weaver, if he gets the opportunity, he could be really good.
Yeah, I think I was just like, just how many closers are actually available in free agency. I'm like, I don't think Luke Weaver is going to...
Who knows?
Gonna get a chance, but it could be depending on what he's looking for, and you know, I don't think he's gonna go be a closer for like a contender, maybe, unless he takes a discount or takes a, you know, he should get paid similar to like it's like that Robert Stevenson, that like 3 years, $30 million dollar type range, I would think. So yeah, we'll see. I probably should have him a little bit higher than I had him. I was outside of the top 50. But yeah, I'm just thinking he's not going to close. But there's, you never know. There's there's always a chance that that's who one team really wants wants in their ninth inning.
All right, and lastly, technically the biggest discrepancy between pitchers, between a pitcher that we both ranked, Edwin Uceta, you had at 40. I had him at 31. That's 9 spot difference. I think both of us now would shift it around a little bit, and I think you're definitely moving him up. Where would you place him now that Pete Fairbanks is no longer pitching for the Rays?
Somewhere between, like, I don't know, 18 and 25. Let's see if I can narrow that down.
I think wherever you would have Ronnie Henriquez.
That makes sense. And that's, I've mentioned those two guys a lot together today. So, and that 18 to 24, 5. I mean, I'm going to get Ryan Walker out of there. I just don't see that happening. It's, So, Uceta now is fine. I mean, where does Griffin Jacks go
from? Right. I'm still worried that he might start, so that's why I didn't have him in the top 40. Brian Baker could be in there, but like, as we mentioned, there's lefties there too. There's plenty of guys that could close, but Edwin Uceta seems to be the best, or probably the top option. Who knows?
Even when they had an open, closer role, was it last year? When Fairbanks was hurt, they didn't really love going. They didn't want to go to Uceta unless it was like a multi-inning or like a know, certain situational things. So maybe they just, like we kind of talked about, maybe it's like this kind of ends up being like Detroit's bullpen where you set us in that Will Vest role where he's going to get probably the most saves, but he's not going to get every save.
And I think Uzeta's better than Will Vest.
Yeah, and even if that is his role, and like if he has that Vest or Ronnie Henriquez type role,
he's still 20.
He still belongs in the top 25, top 20.
All right. Well, that's our top 40. I feel like we definitely worked through some of our thoughts on these guys, and I think we definitely come out of this podcast with different rankings, not dramatically so, but definitely a bit different. But that's why you don't just rely on one set of rankings, unless it's pitcherless rankings and you're just like,
for sure,
I need my rankings. You always rely on pitcherless rankings. But that will do it for this live from First Pitch Arizona edition of the First Pitch podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on socials at I am Rick Graham. Right now, I mean, we just, 2 weeks ago released the rankings. So, when I get back from Arizona, I'm going to start looking at saves plus holds, diving into that. Now that closer ranks are out, I'll probably update the closer ranks, I think, by the end of the year as well, just to keep that updated and fresh. And then, as free agents sign, I'll try to, stay on top of that because there's going to be a lot of different bullpen, shakers and movers or closers, especially the closer list is going to change so many times over the next 2 months, 3 months. So it's
going to be a crazy offseason.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It's going to be a fun offseason. I'm looking forward to it, especially from a reliever standpoint.
Yeah, as long as the Dodgers don't sign everybody, it will be fun.
Yeah, they're going to sign Kyle Tucker in 2 weeks.
All right. Well, you can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I am going to be working on a lot of starting pitching stuff this offseason, so stay tuned for that. You may even hear me doing a few First Pitch podcasts a few days a week as well, breaking down my process on those starting pitchers. So look for that. You can find more of my work over at baseballhq.com as well. But that'll do it for this episode 141 of the In the Pen Podcast. We'll talk to you all in a couple of